Hello and welcome to the South Australian Playwrights Podcast. I am delighted to have in the virtual podcast studio the wonderful Elena Verica from Insight Arts. How are you, Elena?
I'm good. I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm dealing with the apocalypse well, I think. I've found peace within myself. And you?
Yeah, well, I think that's a major achievement. I haven't quite found peace in myself yet. What I have come to terms with is this sort of surreal experience of what it's like to realize you're in a moment in history and have no idea what that looks like. So I'm
Absolutely.
Looking forward to a little bit of 2020 hindsight, because right now there's a lot of you know, unclear perspectives going on.
It seems to be a moment of extreme confusion for everyone. We're kind of flapping about, or I am.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're in a moment of redefining the way we live, the way we communicate. You know, on one hand, I swing to this concept of, okay, we've actually all been preparing for engaging via social media and social distancing via technology for a couple of decades now. Like, you know, this trajectory has almost been inevitable.
Yeah.
And in some ways, thank God for it. Because if we didn't, imagine how removed we'd be if we didn't have all this technology.
Absolutely. It's extraordinary,
you know,
isn't
it? We've been beating up about it to say, you know, kids, you mustn't just communicate through social media. You have to be face-to-face. But if they didn't have that,
where
then,
would we be?
You know, they'd be really, really isolated.
We'd be like villagers in the Middle Ages, you know. We'd be building these idols and burning them and dancing around them. Actually, that sounds like
go pagan.
Yeah, we'd all go pagan. It sounds quite fun, actually. Anyway, look, let me just pause now to actually fully introduce Elena Verica from the wonderful organisation Insight Arts, which has been supporting artists for many, many years in many, many ways. Could you just elaborate a little bit on what you do, Elena?
Yeah, look, we're a fairly broad-reaching organisation in what we do. We started Insight Arts in 2008, and since then we've got four directors, which is myself, Lee Cumberledge, Jason Cross and Victoria Raywood, and the four of us have really quite diverse skill sets, from dedicated producing and admin support through to being artists ourselves and being fully involved in the creative process. And so we've kind of joined those skill sets into the pot to work with artists either in the process of something which is fully developed and formed and really needs a producer to come on and help it be seen by the world and to get it onto a full tour circuit and build that tour with the artist, right through to not even an early concept, but an early artist, you know, within their concept, and to work with them over many, many years. And a number of the artists we've been working with, we've had, you know, many years of a relationship with them.
Fantastic.
And it's not been just about the development of a particular work, but it's been a development of their form.
Amazing.
And
yeah.
And then we make work ourselves as well as artists in our own right. We sort of do the full gamut, really.
Yeah, I love the Insight Arts. You're like a big cliff, like perched over the ocean of artists, and you can like see everything. see the whole the swirling, writhing ocean of creativity, and in all its forms, in all its stages of development, which is why Elena, you're so well placed to start the conversation of where to now. And I was going to call this podcast, or I will call this podcast, The Arts Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Are we facing an apocalypse?
Look, we might be. I think we're certainly, I think humans are so against change. We're such a change resistant by nature that the only way that we are forced to change is when we're dealt a cliff like this, where we're sort of, you know, forced to be placed in a position to review things as they are because they are no longer the way they've always been. And I think if that's the definition of an apocalypse, I think that's what we're in. Like, I think that we're in a stage where the way things have been done have kind of been begging for a change. You know, funding's been depleted, audiences are depleting. There's an evolution and a revolution of the way that art is being explored and being created and being experienced. And that has brought in questions around consumption and anonymity. You know, if people, for instance, in the music sector, can just consume music with no regard for loving the artist like you used to, where you'd go out and you'd follow an artist and you'd buy all their music and you'd go to the local music shop and, you know, you had to.
It required a lot more effort. Yeah, absolutely.
It did. Whereas now you can just, you know, consume it without anyone knowing who you are or there being any sort of emotional direct, even if it's, you know, through just the emotional link to between the consumer or the audience and the artist or the maker.
Yeah, I love that. Like, well, you mentioned the anonymity of consuming and that nature of the impersonal nature of consuming when we this far removed. And I'm finding personally I'm on screens all day, every day, communicating via screens. And you and I are now communicating via sort of screens.
Distance.
And what are we losing, but what have we gained?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think it's been begging to happen, and it's that's what I mean by our sort of resistance to change, but need for recognition of it in the face of it. So this has kind of pushed us off the cliff.
Amazing
where we have to start.
You said we've sort of been prepared for this as well. Like all this time we've been saying, you know, get off the screen and you know, stop communicating via this means, and now it's become our only means.
Well, and also our only means in isolation. So, you know, we're consuming films in our bedrooms rather than in the cinemas. You know, there's become a natural progression towards moving to a one-on-one relationship with the art. And I think that, and even in the live, you know, when you went down to Garden of Unearthly Delights during the Fringe just now, just pre-apocalypse, if that's what it's pre-explosion.
Just pre-apocalypse too. It was really the apocalypse eve.
EFG. You know, there was quite a few, and there is more and more the immersive, experiential, limited numbers kind of experiences that artists have been creating.
Yeah.
So I actually think that it's been steering towards it. This might just jettison it forward a bit to give us this time to, because inevitably, whatever you make, the feeling that you are carrying as you make it. It permeates the work and the experience of the work. So if you make a work, I believe, out of you know, out of loneliness or out of sadness or out of isolation, it's a very different experience to if you're making something from a place of joy or just celebration. Do you know they inevitably create? That's not to say that either work is worse than each other or better than each other. That's just to say that the emotion or the context of when the work is made, it threads all the way through the experience
absolutely.
Of the work.
And I thought it was really interesting what you say, that personal relationship that's growing between the artist and the consumer, a little bit like reading a novel in a sense, that we're now consuming it the way we want to consume it within the intimacy not only of our own home when we're watching it with other people, but just in front of our own device, that we've taken this device like a book, like one would pick up a novel and then have your own trajectory with the understanding with the artist. And here we are, all these little units kind of pinging ideas back and forth off each other in our dark little caves. It's kind of exciting.
But, you know, like it may be that it bounces back. I don't know. We'll see. But this idea of the shared experience. And when you say books, you know, apparently the early writings, they didn't realise that they could read it in their heads. They thought it had to be read out aloud.
Okay.
And then people realised that they were able to read it in their heads and make it a personal thing. So, you know, but the joy of reading it out loud or, you know, sharing it because there was only one person that was literate, but that had a huge effect then on the number of people who became literate because they wanted to be able to read too, because everybody else was reading for themselves.
And in their heads, things change. Their heads are all different. So their heads made its own sense.
That. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, I think there's there is an inevitable major shift. It will not go back to normal, and nor should it, because I don't think that what we had was perfect, of course, because nothing is. So, you know, and what, I think we...
What was imperfect? What were the problems that you found in the previous era? Let's call it that.
Gosh, wow. Need a bit more time for reflection on that one. Maybe if the virus could go for another few months.
But I mean, insofar as like we were grinding to a sort of a screaming halt in terms of support for live performance, in terms of engaging with the avant-garde, I felt that everything was sort of being diluted in this on-demand sense towards artists. Like if I'm going to consume your product, I will do it on my terms. It seemed to be this is where audiences were coming from, and you know, you resist it for a while, and you had the old paradigms of theatre where one expected them to, you know, buy a ticket and sit there and listen to you, and now it's not, well, I'm not. I'm going to download you if I can, which I get, which I resisted for a while, but then that's reality now. And that can be a good thing.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing to sort of go with the ease of access. It has absolutely changed the way that people have engaged in art. Because they can download things so easily, or because they can, you know, just watch it and stream it at home. But it doesn't ever, ever replace the live experience that people crave. You know, people still need that. I mean, look at the uproar at the idea of closing down everything to, you know, isolate in your house. Yeah, you know, people need people. People need those live experiences. And I think that in the era pre, to go back to that sort of question.
What should we call the era? Let's give it a name. Pre-corona, the pre-corona epoch.
Pre-pandemic.
Yeah, what were you doing pre-pan? Any of the listeners out there, if you want to spread that around and make that go viral, no pun intended, the pre-pan. I want us all to be talking about, hey, man, what were you doing in the pre-pan? I was touching people. I was hugging people. I was drinking and spitting in the pre-pan.
And I think that is all going to come back. You know, that'll all actually be celebrated. There's a beautiful sort of thought of that every day when you're not dealing with something like this, it's worth celebrating, therefore. So, you know, every other day pre-pan was actually a celebration. You know, whether we can sort of look to this idea, I mean, I think we were careering towards a question because of the ease of access to consume music and film and, you know, consume art, so to speak. I think it blurred the line between art and entertainment.
Yes.
And I think it's once you've, you know, there is also the question around increasing population already means that there's and then increasing access means that there's kind of a sway towards the choices people make towards what they want. And, of course, entertainment is the easy one. But I do believe that there is always a percentage of people who hunger for the question. They hunger for the sort of opening up the rib cage and having a look at who they are inside. Those, you know, and I think that's where art will always mystify and challenge and excite.
Yeah, absolutely.
And inspire.
And confront. Yeah.
And I don't think that will ever change.
No, it'll always have a place.
Will always be there.
And in a sense, in terms of its on-demand kind of platform now, it's helpful in terms of your experience with it, like an art gallery. Like if you wander around a sculpture or an installation art, you can choose where you look. You can choose what you sort of how you experience it. And that seems what is kind of happening with online delivery, that you choose how you want to engage with it.
Yeah. I think, you know, and inevitably there are people that don't, you know, that they're either confounded by art or think they don't belong to it. It had for quite a long time, it became a reputation of being a bit elitist or only being, you know, sort of having a status kind of comment to it, where because it was ticketed and it was expensive and therefore only the classes could afford it. And had the gowns, you know, going back, you know, over the last many centuries. So it sort of crafted a bit of a to its own death in a way. It crafted a bit of a separate or separatist thing that it meant that you were silly if you didn't understand art. But I think art and the art making is something that completely belongs to human nature.
Yes, absolutely.
And that it's something that we all do in our own way, and that we all need to understand our world. And it might be something that you rub up against quite subtly. It might be something that, you know, you just walk past, you know, the design or the product of someone performing on the street, or do you know, but it gives vibrancy and it changes your mood, and do you know, so I think that there is going to be a comeback of art, but I don't think it will be
In the form that we know
in the past.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think we've really been confronted with this extraordinary event, which is making us question almost everything, really, you know, like our economies, our relationship with art, our relationship with media. And are we going to go back to that sort of sort of Renaissance idea of the craftsperson rather than the artist? It sort of goes away from the ego of the person creating the art to a more democracy of pastiche. I notice on the net people are borrowing elements from all sorts of artwork and all sorts of creators and then putting them all together and bouncing them around so the audience just becomes completely interactive. You know, we're no longer told what to watch. We determine it and actually contribute to it, which is a very interesting part of this modern consuming of media when we're all on our computers and we can all create as well. The tools of creation are so much more readily available.
True. I think I would say the tools of creation have been readily available in each era of whatever format. Do you know, I mean, people yes, there's the tools now of the technology and everyone's got that at their fingertips should they want to do it. But it's for the artist to take those tools and to use them in ways that have not, you know, are reflecting something back so that the tool becomes the lesser thing, but it's the thought and the concept and the human element behind it, or, you know, at the forefront of it, that is the thing that we experience. And I don't think that is I think at the moment where our immediate response, the largest sort of response from the art, a lot of them have responded at the moment by saying, how can we get our work online? How can we be presenting, you know, a number of the theatre houses all over the world, operas and major houses in Germany are showing their work
online,
their theatre work, from the stages.
And National Theatre, you know, Live.
Exactly. And Scotland's doing it. You know, it's one of those things where that's, I think, a first response. That's almost the obvious response. And I think we'll move through that. There are some people also that are collaborating online. You know, we're doing sort of rehearsals are continuing through virtual meeting in a room, so to speak. So those things will continue to happen, but it'll be interesting to see then how that permeates the result, because at the moment, obviously, all performances are wiped off the table. So every schedule has been wiped clear for basically the whole year. I think there's a few conversations that are still hovering around that September sort of time for people, and you know, likewise for our artists too. We've got September is like a hovering line, but pretty much everything in terms of festivals and tours are wiped clear until that time frame, and then that's just a wait and see as to how long things get extended. So it's a really interesting time to reflect on and creatively develop ideas and work because it challenges you. Normally you've always got an end game. You've always got a time frame that you know you're working towards. Yeah, and at the moment we can't have that. We don't have any sense of we'll be back, you know, up on the stages, out in the space at X month.
Yes.
Date.
So it's like
we don't have that.
We're in
so
a sense of pause.
It's a bit of a void.
Yeah, yeah. It's a void, like a void in terms of, but it hasn't, there's been no cancellation as such. It's like we're just postponing to, you know, but with no end in sight. I find this is a really weird situation because it's not like, right, that's it, it's all over. It's like, well, no, we're just now in hiatus. And so everyone's, yeah, you're sitting there thinking, okay, well, how long will this hiatus go on for? And it could be 3 months, it could be 6 months. They're talking about writing off the rest of the year. But yeah, so it's very, very strange. But I mean, it's forced me to think about, okay, we had a bunch of productions with our South Australian Playwrights Theatre Company. We had a bunch, and now they have all been sort of cancelled / postponed, but we will do them. And I'm thinking, well, are there other forms of doing this? Like can you, right, a stage play? I'm looking at radio plays, I'm looking at audio plays. But even just thinking about that, I've got to get the actors together, we've got to sort of start talking to each other. But now with total lockdown that is imminent, how can we do that?
Yeah. And, you know, I think we did a rehearsal read yesterday of Recalibrate for South Australian Playwrights, and it was fantastic, I have to say. And in many ways, it made you listen harder because you weren't distracted by the physical presence of others in the room. And so you were tuned into the voice much more acutely.
Yeah.
And it was really powerful. It made me certainly hear the words and hear the essence of the scenes with a really lovely clarity to it. So, you know, I think that goes to the radio play sort of premise where you say, you know, you're just hearing what does that one sensory do?
Yes.
And then, but it is a form in its own right. And I think that's the glitch that I've got with theatres that are now streaming their performances online.
Mm.
I just think that you cannot replicate or replace the experience of the live performer on an online two-dimensional flat surface. Like, to me, it just doesn't carry. But if you change the form and or the format and go into radio play or film or, series where, you know, there's just been an explosion of people are looking for that more in-depth exploration of character and their journey. So the series has gone through the roof in support and format.
Absolutely, yeah.
Versus film, which is still obviously strong, but people kind of go, the film just sort of didn't go in far enough. It's got to be blockbuster almost as a film. If it's anything more than that, if it's a really crafted experience that's got the drama to it, it needs to be a series.
Yeah, absolutely. People are wanting more detail, and they want to dwell in the world more as well. They want to sort of stay in that zone, and even add to it. But I'm thinking with audio presentation of stuff that the podcast explosion that's happened recently is very interesting that people want kind of to multitask nowadays. So they kind of think, well, I don't have time to sit there and watch something. I've got to, you know, do all this stuff, but I still want to engage with story and I still want to engage with character. And that's where podcasting and audio plays can work really well. And so we're heading towards this new era where we've got to think of different ways of delivery.
Mm. And I think on the flip side of that, on the multitasking / busyness, is people want to, I don't want to just drive, or I don't want to just go on my run. I want to go on my run and absorb a podcast. You know, like the run on itself is not enough. I want to take input as well.
Do something like that time I tried to learn Spanish in the car while I was driving to work. Hola. That's about it. That's as far as I got.
I'm with you there. I've not ever had great experience with that whole idea of learning a language while doing something else.
Yeah, you may as well stick the textbook underneath your pillow. It has exactly the same effect for me anyway. But look, yeah, it's a crazy time, Elena. And but a time I'm of innovation, you know, and
I think so.
Different modes of delivery. And you know, this will all be over one day, I guess. And then hopefully we can take those lessons that we've learned, those new techniques that we've tried, into the practice of our art.
Mm. I think there'll be a melting of the edges. I mean, again, it has already obviously been evolving this way, with there being The Australia Council, you know, still holds the dance, theatre categories, you know, literature, and it still holds all of these defined categories. And it knows that it's flawed because there's such a softening of the edges and a merging between the different art forms. And I think that this might almost create a new definition of a new form, you know, because of this way of technology created work. You know, I was kind of wondering the other day about the involvement of AI and how it could make that leap between online or virtual presentations of things, but make it more interactive or more alive in the private space of the consumer.
Wow. Yeah, like extrapolate the concept and, you know, in a real way.
In a real way. Mm. You know, like, I don't know, that might be a you know, a really interesting way for the technology to leap out of itself,
and come alive, yeah, and take over us. Yeah. just take our character traits and then be a better version of ourselves. That's what scares the hell out of me. You know, I try to pretend every day that I am the best version of myself, but I'm sure I'm not. And I'm sure there's a computer program there that can make me better. Anyway.
I still fundamentally think that no matter what, this goes actually to the heart of why art has to be made, why it is something we need, is that point of no matter how many tools and how much technology we have around us, it cannot answer the question, let alone ask the question that cuts through to the core of why we are who we are, why we have the world that we have, and how on earth do we understand why we're on this world doing what we're doing, or with what's happening around us.
Yeah,
I totally agree. In the time and place of now, I think that's been one of the things where so much has been stripped back in terms of busyness and deadlines and tours and performances to get ready for, you know, and slowing down of all of the aspects of economy and all of the questions that brings in. It sort of takes you to a much barer outlook.
To look at
the right now a little bit. You know, it brings the moment right into focus and say, okay, well, you know, we've had all these distractions, we have all these false pressures that we put on ourselves and put on each other. So they've now all been removed because no one can go anywhere and we're all put into self-isolation. And so now all we've got is the questions about our humanness and our shared, like, what is important to share and what, you know we need it. And so, it, you know, I think that's a thing that only the imperfect Matt Hawkins, or, you know, the individual human self can ask.
Absolutely.
You know, computer and technology has never usurped that.
That's right. They can't reproduce us as much as they try. And they're working on it. I tell you what, all these data banks, they've all gotten together. They're working on the perfect cyber being that's immune to viruses. Look, Elena, this has been a fantastic conversation. I don't know if we've solved any problems, but we've stirred the pot.
I imagine. Probably just, you know, slightly terrified a few more people, but, you know, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully.
We'll come out the other side.
Look, so thank you so much for being on the South Australian Playwrights podcast. We are onwards and upwards.
Absolutely. You know, we'll just see what comes tomorrow and tomorrow, don't we?
Absolutely. Thank you, Elena.
Thanks, Matt.